Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Real Spoilers, powered by ReviewSTL.com.
Warning, the following film discussion will ruin the ending of any movie you haven't seen. Example, Bruce Willis is dead at the end of The Sixth Sense. See how I ruined it for you? Just like that. Here are a few more.
Silent breed is people!
I am the father.
Get it?
Real Spoilers. You've been warned.
Broadcasting from the lush but not lavish studios located in the basement of the O'Keefe Institute for Advanced Film Snarkitude, this is Real Spoilers, episode 577. Yet another new release, Scoob.
We're on a roll.
Joe, sing the theme song.
Oh, no, I can't do that.
No, you're right. You can't, because then we'd have to pay for it.
Yeah, we'd have to pay for it.
So it's not common that Joe is the voice of reason. So
yeah, I know. That never happens.
But wait a minute. Can we sing the Scrappy-Doo theme song?
It's a true milestone.
Nobody knows that. It's a true milestone, yeah.
So I guess let's go around the table and everyone can introduce themselves.
This is Joe.
This is Kevin.
And this is Tom. Quick shameless plugs. Don't forget, we're available on Apple Podcasts, where you can go rate, review, and subscribe. We have a new review.
Oh,
do we really?
We do.
Yeah, three episodes in a row.
I know. This is from Chuck Norris 787.
Oh, man.
Oh.
Well, whether it's good or bad, I'm not going to say a word.
Well, and he says, hey, y'all, just wanted to send a little encouragement your way. Thanks so much for having a podcast with such good content and helpful reviews. I'm a sophomore in college with a major in film studies, and Real Spoilers has helped me dissect many a movie and understand many things concerning film in general. I'm worried for his grades.
Yeah, no kidding. Don't blame us. Like, when you get those grades back, don't blame us.
Yes, we have no official schooling in film, just to be clear.
I took a film appreciation
class.
Yeah,
I took one.
Does that count?
Yeah, like, so. Anyway, so he goes on to say, so keep it up, and as a request by a fellow quarantini who definitely needs more entertainment, could y'all possibly do a review on Stanley Kubrick's The Shining? Thanks, and ooh, keep up the great work, Josh S.
Should we tell Josh that there is a review for The Shining on the Patreon?
Oh, did you guys do it on Patreon?
Just outed him.
Yeah.
Outed Chuck Norris.
Sorry. Oh, no.
So
his beard is another fist.
Yeah, so thank you very much for the kind words. And also, don't forget, wherever you're getting your podcast, to be sure and subscribe so you never miss an episode. And, of course, find us on Facebook, facebook.com/realspoilers. Like the page. Join the group. You really want to be in the group, not the page.
Yeah, at this point.
The page, like, I don't know if we should say this about our own page. It's kind of a cesspool. Like,
it's pretty bad.
Why do so many people that hate movies and everything about them like that page? I don't understand. Like, you can post anything and they'll be like, F this, who cares?
Honestly,
and that's not us.
I think it's because, like, you know, you guys have seen comments on news pages before on Facebook. Mm-hmm. Like, we post a lot of news, and so I think people follow us to get news, and especially entertainment-related news. But, I mean, if you see the comments on any news page,
yeah,
people are just crazy that comment on these things.
I just, when I see it sometimes, I'm like, what, you don't like any movie, you don't seem to like anyone that makes the movies.
I don't think you like us.
I'm just like, why do you follow, you know what I mean? It's like I don't care about sports, right? I don't follow sports pages, and then when they post a sports story, be like, who gives a crap? Like, I'm just...
It's weird.
I don't hate follow pages.
And then there's almost always somebody that's like, yeah, that's what these libs deserve.
Oh man,
yep, I'm just yep. like,
oh, I do hate follow one page, and it's Cosmic Book News.
Yeah,
Joe, you've got like you get this obsession with them. You just can't stop.
I comment almost all the time. Be like, I call the writer out by name. And it's like, you're terrible. This isn't even like, oh, your sources say that Ryan Reynolds is coming back for Zack Snyder's Justice League. Sure he is. Okay. you dope.
So anyway, be sure and like the or join the group, which is called the League of Show Sharers. You can find it by typing in Real Spoilers or League of Show Sharers. We'd love to have you, unless you're one of those other guys, but they don't listen anyway, so who cares?
And we can kick you out of the group, so meh.
And you can also become an actual show sharer by sharing an episode. People who were kind enough to share an episode this week: Griffin Fox Smith, Carl Clarkson, Chris Sanders, Dylan A. Lang, Travis Tewitt, Lane Levanway, Susan Carlson, Julianne Jordan, Aaron Marlowe, Tammy Sherman Powers, Chris Williams, Brent Smith, Gabriel Lugo, Chris Magic Man, and Ron Johnson. So thank you very much, guys. And, of course, don't forget our Patreon, patreon.com/RealSpoilers. $5 a month, and you get all sorts of bonus content, like the aforementioned review of The Shining. And you get to help out, and that's greatly appreciated. So anyway, there's all of that. I guess Joe, for some reason, wants to discuss the Snyder Cut ever so briefly.
Not even a big deal. Just like the fact that we were like, it's never going to happen. It's never going to happen. It's never going to happen. Oh crap! It's happening.
Well, it was never going to happen.
It's a brilliant move by HBO.
Yeah,
it's a brilliant move by Warner Brothers to get that on the service.
If it wasn't for the new streaming platforms being desperate for new content to lure people in, it's because of a changing, environment or landscape for delivery systems that made it possible. But I would also say this notion that like Sia did exist. If you have to spend $20 or $30 million
yeah,
to complete
exactly.
a movie, it did not exist.
Honestly, we could do a whole podcast or podcast series.
So I have to
on
believe that everything's been
story
filmed. They just don't
over
have
the
any
past 2 years.
Effects.
It's really amazing how this thing came to be, but I will say that even though it's like right place, right time, without the persistence of Snyder and without the support of the fans, like HBO Max wouldn't have done this. So it really is because of the release of the Snyder Cut crowd, even though it's like they lucked into it, but you got to admit that it's because of the support that they're like, oh, wow, people do want this and there is an interest. And so, I mean, you got to give them credit, and especially Zack Snyder, for trying to complete this thing, because he lucked himself into, one, being able to finish his project, and two, making a nice payday.
Yeah, it's the right way to do it, because if you release that on Blu-ray or back in theaters, I think you're going to make some money, maybe not enough. This way, you've got a guaranteed $14.99 a month for, it comes out next year, I guess. But yeah, you've got people locked into a service. It's the smarter bet.
This is the new business model where people are looking for content to justify spending, $10 a month, $7, $15, whatever.
Are they 14? I think they're 14.
It's $14.99 right now. If you pre-order, it's $11.99.
Okay,
but
if you have HBO Go, you get lumped in.
But I don't think you get it if you have that through another service. So like, I had HBO Go, or whatever it was called. I had subscribed to HBO through Amazon Prime, so it was one of my Prime channels. And so I don't think if you've done that, it's very confusing and convoluted. I really think that they're mucking it up. Like, they've made it really hard to figure out. But so like, I went in yesterday and canceled my HBO subscription.
Yeah.
Through Amazon Prime, and then resubscribed directly through HBO, because it's $3 a month cheaper, and I don't think I was going to get any of the HBO Max stuff. And so, like, right now, I mean, from best I can understand, they've got like three different streaming platforms. There's HBO Now, HBO Max, and HBO Go. And I'm like, I don't know where the hell I'm supposed to be for anything.
Yeah. I thought HBO Go was like the, like if you subscribed via cable.
Right.
Yeah.
Like that was the, like you could just enter, you know, you know, when you go on, you enter like that digit code and it
right.
automatically, I think that's what that was. HBO Now was like the independent mm-hmm. non-cable streaming
gotcha.
One.
Yeah.
And so, then HBO Max will be the, I think HBO Now or HBO Now is going away.
I think so, Now is converting to Max.
That's what I think.
The way that I understand it is that those are going to go away and they're just going to turn into HBO Max. I don't think you're going to be able to subscribe to HBO Cinemax or HBO Max. I think you get to either subscribe to HBO Max or if you have cable like Spectrum and AT&T, which are both the ones that we have locally. And then, of course, there's some others across the country. If you have HBO service through them, it's going to be included. So you're not going to have to pay for an extra thing. But yeah, I think they're going to get rid of all that other stuff. So they are going to consolidate it, and it will be like, here, you have this. You either pay for the service or you get it through cable, which is how it should be because it just got convoluted as they kept adding right. new services.
Plus, you got the DC Universe app.
Yeah, which definitely I would bet money on that. Well, yeah, that's clearly going to go away. But going back to what I was saying, what's so smart that these companies are doing, because this has become the new business model, and slowly over time they're adding these streaming platforms and these companies can see that that's the future. But we begged the question, or we, you know, we brought up the question of how are they going to justify it? Like, how are people going to keep stair-stepping these streaming services to where they're spending as much as a cable network? But the only answer, if they are, and it's still an if, but if they are, is content. And so these companies have to have ways to get you to subscribe and keep you subscribing. And so, like Joe said, rather than try to release this thing at a Fathom event or theatrically or DVD and have it be a you know, it's not going to make its money back, but they can do this value-added thing and say, hey, this is one of the perks, plus all these movies, plus all these shows. And I think it is a really smart way to do it. And, you know, I'll tell you what, from what I've understood, I don't necessarily agree with the people saying release the Snyder Cut. Like, we've all given our opinions. We don't have to go back into this. But
sure.
I think it's been a really toxic environment, and I really don't like the way it's been handled. But from what I understand, like, Zack Snyder, we know that he had that tragedy. Mm-hmm. And I also understand that only 25% of his cut ended up as the final version. So he really didn't get to make the movie that he wanted. And so, like, good for him. Like, I'm happy he gets to tell his story. I'm glad that the fans that want it are going to get to see it. And you know what? If it's better than what we got, great. If it's not, then there you go. And I mean, I don't wish ill upon.
It won't be.
I mean, but the original, I mean, in my opinion, the original was really bad. So I don't know how it could be.
I guess
better,
that's true. We can only go up from that original one. That's fair.
That's what I'm thinking. And it's going to be like, the word is that it's going to be like a 4-6 part series. So it may be like 6 hours long, but it's going to be edited episodically, almost like it's a Watchmen type series. So, I mean, it could be really interesting, but either way, I mean, it's happening. We're going to be able to stop the whole hashtag thing we've had for 2 years, and we'll see what happens.
Until David Ayers starts saying he wants his own cut of it. Suicide
apparently they're doing it.
Why wouldn't you? Right? You've got it. Right? And there's enough vitriol behind that movie. And apparently it's a completely different movie.
I'm honestly more interested in seeing that than
I agree.
The Snyder Cut.
I think David Ayer is a very good director. I think he's like he was the right guy to do that movie, but they recut that thing and made it super weird and tried to be goofy with it. And if his is like an action movie and less comedy, I don't know.
Yeah, that's
why not.
My understanding is that his cut is like really gritty, rated R type thing. But you know, if you've seen that Netflix movie Bright, which was like the first,
that's real bad.
it's awful, and like I couldn't get through it. Like, every other word is an F-bomb. And I mean, sure, we talk to Joe on a regular basis and we're used to that, but
I have done a very good job in quarantine of keeping it together.
Yeah,
and trust me, it hasn't been easy.
But that movie is like, it's terribly written, it's not funny, and it, you know, like, I don't know if that's David Ayer getting free reign and being able to run wild with a movie. It's like, I don't know if I want to see that Suicide Squad. So I guess it just depends.
Couldn't be any worse than the one we saw.
Well, that's, I mean, it's kind of, we're kind of in the same boat. You're right.
Yeah, we are in the same. We're very much so.
Yeah.
But anyway, so we'll see what happens with those. But the worst thing about this, and, you know, friend of the show, Jason Michael, brought this up on, I think it was on my Facebook wall, so it wasn't on the group or the page, but he said that it basically sets a really bad precedent for people.
It sets a real bad precedent.
That if you complain, there's a difference between fans signing a petition and, like, politely, you know, saying, like, oh, we'd love to see this and let's support the filmmakers and whatever, and then, like, the really toxic outrage that's for the past 2 years on this thing. And so I just would hate for people to think, like, the internet's already bad enough, and for them to keep winning and getting their way from acting the way they do, that's the worst, most dangerous part of this.
Yeah, yep. It's not the persistence. It's just how many people were complete D-bags about it. And yeah, you hate to see, you hate to reward bad behavior. Anyone who has children should be able to tell you that. So.
Yes, sir.
Exactly. Yes, sir. So, you know, good for the people. Good for the people that are, I mean, like Jeff Wildman, that, I mean, the people that are fans and polite and go about it the right way. Like, they want to see it. They're going to get it. I'm happy for them. I think that we're just, the only turnoff to us is the people that the release the Snyder Cut hashtag, the really, like, the really
gross,
loud,
the really gross.
Yeah, it's hard to describe, but, you know, the ones that were the mutable ones, right?
Yeah, sure, sure.
Yeah,
the ones, so there that, we go. The ones that post in the comment section on our Facebook page. That's who we're talking about. So anyway, I guess that's enough of that. I guess let's dig into to Scoob, shall we?
Joe, hit what? The theme.
Nope. Oh. This is it. It's safe to say that this is Hanna-Barbera's cash cow, right? Like, they don't really do anything else except Scoob, right?
Well, no, Hanna-Barbera is a huge giant universe. I mean, I think Scoob's the biggest one, or Scooby-Doo's,
but when was
one.
The last time you saw another Hanna-Barbera cartoon in recent memory?
Oh,
besides this,
weren't they gonna do like an awesome looking CG Flintstones or something? I swear I saw something.
Well, no, there was talk for a while of Seth MacFarlane rebooting the Flintstones.
Okay,
but you know, they produce a lot of content for Cartoon Network, and there's been a lot of direct to home video Scooby-Doo releases over the years. And
That's what Joe means, though. I mean, if you look at the only one that's consistently putting out movies, like at least one a year and probably more, they've got current TV shows, they've had like 20 TV shows over the years, is Scooby-Doo. I mean, it is their cash cow for sure.
Yeah, I'm just saying that they have a lot of recognizable properties that they haven't maybe tapped into lately, and I think that this is their
way to do that.
This is their jumping off point to be able to start reintroducing that stuff.
Right, right. This was like Warner Brothers Animation. They found a sweet spot there for a second with the Lego stuff.
Well, they did.
They did.
I can't believe they lost that.
At this point, why? With Warner Brothers, it's of course, you know.
But fair enough. But it's like, geez, they had these movies that were huge hits, and even if the second one wasn't as good as the first one, it was still good, and they've got all these spinoffs and things. I just cannot believe that they let that go. Like, Universal must have paid them a fortune.
Is that pre-AT&T or post-AT&T?
I think it was post because it was more recently. We just heard it, and I know that they bought them like sometime in the past year. But if you think about it now, for Universal, what a smart move on their part, because they're going to be able to make like straight up Jurassic World, you know, Lego movies. Like, they're going to be able to Back to the Future Lego movies.
They have a lot more revenue streams to take advantage of, right? Like, they have the theme parks, and so
That's true. You don't really want the Lego guy in Six Flags.
You know?
Even then, Warner Brothers doesn't own those theme parks anymore, right? They've been sold off, and they have a licensing agreement with them.
They license them, yeah.
But they don't own them. And so, you know, they're not super concerned about providing content for the theme parks.
Yeah.
Where Universal is. They're in a huge arms race with Disney. And so it makes way more sense. What I haven't seen anything about it. I'd really be interested to know what the arrangement they have in terms of Lego properties in Universal Studios versus Legoland.
Because,
you know, Legoland, I'm sure, has seen an uptick with the success of these films. And so, you know, I got to think that one of the things Universal wanted Lego for was to incorporate it into their theme park. So, you know, and they can Legofy a lot of Universal properties. I guess this, I wonder if this also means the end of kind of Lego being able to license all of these other film properties. Or
Star Wars and Harry Potter.
Yeah, like I wonder if other studios are going to start to lock that stuff down now and be like, well, no.
Warner Brothers is going to get stuck with, like, the, what was the off-brand movie?
Oh.
That was, like, the, what was that?
The Duplo or whatever?
Diplo, yeah. Warner Brothers is going to double down on Diplo.
But, yeah, I do wonder if you'll see that, like, this age of Lego being able to license all these different IPs is going to come to an end because they're like, well, you picked a side, so
yeah, right.
I wonder. I think it all depends on money, right? Like, yeah. I mean, if they're going to be able to get their property out there and make some money to go make some, you know, other stuff that they want to do, but I could see them pulling it back. I could see them doing something like, oh, well, we'll license ours to this other property, or we'll make our own CG animated movies for these properties.
But I feel like with Warner Brothers, that's kind of been their only go-to as far as, like, in the animated world.
Right. Like,
it's been that Lego stuff recently.
They've got Looney Tunes. Where have they been?
You've got Looney Tunes. You've got Looney Tunes. You've got DC, which, I mean, can lend itself... The right property can lend itself to an animated movie. You've got Hanna-Barbera. You've got, like, these three major properties that could lend themselves to a younger audience.
But they don't have a Kevin Feige that can figure out how to make them palatable to the current generation. Like, that's the problem. Like, because you're right, they have these legacy things, but they've tried to reboot Looney Tunes, what, two or three times in the last 10 years? And they've been okay, but every time they just don't quite get over the hump. And I guess they're trying to reboot what Pinky and the Brain and
Animaniacs
but they just haven't been able to get them to click with people.
Do you think that's because the rawness of the old Looney Tunes, right? Like, it's mallets to the head and setting people on fire, and like that style of cartoon violence isn't quote unquote okay anymore, and those characters don't translate without kind of having that zany, goofy outlet?
I don't know, because you would think Bugs Bunny should translate. I mean, he's a smart ass. He's super snarky. He's meta.
Yeah.
He breaks the fourth wall. I mean, he does all this stuff that modern day audiences should love. He should be very easy to update. But but they are going to run into issues. I mean, you know, Porky Pig, the joke is he has a speech impediment. That's going to get lots of complaints these days. And that, you know, it's been a long time since they've incorporated Speedy Gonzalez.
Which I thought was coming back. I thought they were going to bring him back.
I thought they were going to try to. And it's weird because from what I've read, a lot of Mexicans actually like Speedy Gonzalez. But, mm-hmm.
So Speedy Gonzalez isn't the problem. It's the other mice that are around him.
Right, that are all super lazy. Yeah.
Oh, true,
yeah.
True.
Yeah.
Don't take away the one character that different groups have to embrace. Like, you're right. You hear that a lot of time with cartoons. Whenever there's that one character and people get offended, and then the people that love that character, the people of that race, are like, "Hey, wait a minute! Like, that's my representation. That's my guy."
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, Pepe Le Pew's a little rapey, but you know.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. I mean, there's lots of stuff out there that it's a little, you know, that doesn't comport very well in the present day. But
on the other side, though, real quick, the other side is, like, if you've seen kids' cartoons, like, there's some pretty weird cartoons out there, and they don't shy away necessarily from, I don't want to say violence, but, like, I mean, they could do mallets, and they could do getting crushed by a safe and stuff. Like, kids' cartoons are pretty crazy.
Yeah, I haven't watched a quote-unquote new kids' cartoon in a very long time.
Yeah.
It's, you know,
they're but pretty,
I guess,
like
Gravity Falls. Gravity Falls is the most recent thing that I've watched.
Oh, it's such a great show.
Fantastic.
Oh, but anyway, Hanna-Barbera and Warner Brothers has a deep bench if they could figure out a way to exploit it properly.
And I think if this had gone to theaters and it was extremely successful, which I think it probably would be, I feel like there's probably a cap on Scooby-Doo movies unless they're next level. They have already opened that door with this one, right? Like, they pretty much introduce all of their main characters except for the Flintstones and the Jetsons. Like, those are the two that are kind of left out. When you get to the end credit sequence of this, you see Johnny Quest is there, and I don't think you see... But you see all the big ones.
Yeah, you see Johnny Quest, and you see, I forget the name, the Frankenstein-style robot.
Yeah.
And you see, I think you see Penelope Pitstop at some point.
I think you're right, yeah. So they're setting it up if this is successful.
And also, it's pretty hard to incorporate Flintstones and Jetsons because they take place in radically different time periods.
Yeah, you wouldn't really want to do that unless it's a Flintstones meet the Jetsons type of situation. Like, you'd have to set it up to why these two are meeting each other.
Yeah.
Right.
Although, so, I guess they could have if you can incorporate Captain Caveman, because Captain Caveman started on the Flintstones, if memory serves.
That's right.
And then they brought him forward in time. But
correct.
You know,
but if you go to some, I like the idea of how they do it. Where didn't they like go to some weird planet or something?
They went under Earth.
Yeah, like that's a smart way to do it for sure. But you can't have really the Flintstones living underneath the Earth to be like, oh yeah, because they live in this prehistoric.
Oh, by the way,
well, plus if you did do that, then it kind of ruins the idea of doing a Flintstones movie because now they're no longer in the past, right? And
right.
So like that's
right.
That's what you
the
want
jokes.
From the Flintstones. The joke is yes. All these modern accoutrements that are have to be stylized in this old timey way, but I also think that they're probably concerned that the Flintstones are too big, and if they popped up in Scooby Doo, they'd overpower Scooby.
Yeah,
I would have loved
to have
seen that show. I really wish that Seth MacFarlane show happened, because the Flintstones, I mean, they were an adult sitcom, and
yeah.
I think
it's the Honeymooners.
Yeah, right. And I think that's what, I mean, look at these shows now, that these adult cartoons, I mean, that's what Seth MacFarlane makes, and I feel like that's the perfect modernization of Flintstones. Like, this would be the next step to have him take them on, and I don't know, I just think that would have really played, so I wish that could have happened.
There is a 12 issue, so obviously, you know, Warner Brothers, DC, they had a little bit of a run of a comic book run, a 12 issue run, mm-hmm. by Mark Russell, that if you have the time and you feel like reading it, it's insanely good. Because like they take the aesthetic of the Flintstones and like they do different things with it. And like he just plays with the idea of the Flintstones. It's insanely good. Mark Russell, cool. Stephen Pugh, I think was the artist.
Oh, Pepe Le.
Yeah, right. So this was an interesting movie. The kids liked it. I thought it was fine. Will Forte sucks.
Oh, Will Forte, and I love Will Forte. He is bad in this.
Yeah,
like,
coming
from
Tom,
terrible.
I know that Tom's a huge Will Forte guy, and like off the air when he told me like that was the wrong move, I'm like, wow, that really... What a disservice to fans, first of all. Like, people love Matthew Lillard as Shaggy. He's the new voice of Shaggy in the animated stuff. Like,
and he's
so
good.
You screwed over the fans, and then, like you said, he's just good, and Will Forte sucks. So, like, why would Will Forte be a big enough draw or name to screw Matthew Lillard over? I will never understand that.
Yeah, like, it's like if all of a sudden, like, they had Tom Hanks doing a half-ass Shaggy impersonation, I'd be like, okay, you got an A-lister. But as much as I love Will Forte, like, he doesn't open a movie.
He's not a draw, and especially not in a movie like this. Like, why?
Yeah.
There had to be some weird, like, some studio executive is his kid's godfather. There has to be a connection like that. I'm serious. Like, it makes no sense.
And honestly, like, it's not even the performance that's the problem. Like, he's got, I mean, once you can get past...
To me, it was the performance.
Once you get past that he doesn't consistently sound like Shaggy, I think that there's funny deliveries and good line readings and I like what he brings, but he doesn't sound like Shaggy. He can't consistently hold the voice.
Yeah.
So that's what I mean by the performance. If you can get past the fact that this is, I guess, what Shaggy sounds like now, he's okay. But that's a really big thing to get past.
Right. I mean, it's kind of like, aside from the fact that he doesn't sound like Shaggy, he's a great Shaggy.
Right. But I just mean that, like, as a voice actor, the performance is good, but he does not sound like Shaggy.
For a different character,
it made me hate it even more because I watched the 2002 version first.
Yeah.
And, like, looking at Matthew Lillard do the whole Shaggy thing, it's like, golly.
Yeah, well,
like, he was into it.
We'll
like, he was about it.
We'll get into that next episode. But, yeah, if there was a living embodiment of Shaggy.
Well, not even that. Like you said, he is the...
Oh, no, it's that. Trust me.
Since 2002, though, he's the voice of Shaggy.
All right.
Yeah, in he took over from Casey Kasem, and and I also, when did Scooby talk so much? When did that happen?
Well, he talked a good amount in that movie too.
But not like he does in this. They have him talking a lot. And
he's like carrying on conversations.
Yeah, my stepdaughter is a huge Scooby-Doo fan. She's 13, and she was like, why is he talking so much? Like I didn't like how chatty Scooby was. Like,
but I went back and watched some of the newer cartoons though, because I got one of those like 7-day free trials of Boomerang on Amazon.
Oh yeah,
and
in the
new cartoons he talks a lot too.
That we mean like
this.
The stuff that they're doing. Oh, sure.
The newer
sure.
stuff.
Okay.
Like Scooby-Doo and Guess Who and stuff like that?
Yeah, they make him talk more. And I will say, if you have not seen Scooby-Doo and Guess Who, it's the exact same animation style. It's the same art design as the original Scooby-Doo, Where Are You? So it's a modernized version of those characters. And I'm like, I'm in. It's a fun show.
Yeah. And yeah, that's the one where it's like the Scooby-Doo... It's the series they did where they would have like the celebrity guest stars, mm-hmm. where they'd have like Don Knotts on and Davy Jones.
Oh, Batman and Robin.
But they have current day guest stars. So like,
it's got like the same title cards. Like it looks exactly like they used to do with the celebrity, like Scooby Doo meets the Harlem Globetrotters, and then they've got the cool like, oh yeah, it's really nostalgic if you liked those old shows. And I grew up with Scooby Doo. I love that series.
I did as well.
I've got the Mystery Machine collection.
Yeah, now it's like Ricky Gervais and Steve Urkel, and like I thought the ones that they got were spot on. Like if they were still doing it, that's the kind of guests they would have gotten.
Yeah, and it's still running. That's a currently running show. So
they're still making those.
Like it's a like 2017 to open. So I would recommend.
And that's on Boomerang.
Yeah, they've got the current stuff on Boomerang for that.
Okay, so this is an interesting movie because it does give you the origin of Scooby and Shaggy. Where, you know, it's pretty simple. Scooby was a stray.
And
I thought it was great.
I thought the name thing was brilliant. Because haven't you guys always wondered, like, why are there snacks called Scooby Snacks and the main character's name is Scooby? Like,
I just thought they were super popular.
I mean,
they got their own snack.
I've never needed an explanation, but the fact that Shaggy is trying to figure out a name and he looks at an existing snack called Scooby Snacks, like, that's a really smart idea, I think.
Except it's already established canon that Scooby's real first name is Scoobert.
But
His name is Scoobert. That's his real name, not Scooby.
Right.
Okay, but this movie is a reboot. I mean, there is no canon. This is an origin story of Scooby.
That's Tom and I. That's Tom and I scratching our neck beards. That's
I'm just saying always said his name is Scoobert, and so that's a change.
Right. But
if you watch a new Batman movie and they were like, his name is Keith. It's Keith Wayne. You'd be like
wait a minute.
You'd be like, well, it's a reboot. He's Keith Wayne now.
That's funny. I hear you.
We're just gonna change it to Bryce.
If you're gonna reboot a movie, they're clearly gonna make changes. They're gonna modernize, which I think they did a good job of, and I'm like, okay, that plays.
I'm still trying to figure out how Shaggy was listening to Spotify as a child.
Yeah. Well, you know, and I like it is weird that at first I was a little taken aback because I'm like, wait a minute, what time period does this take place in? But then I remembered that we're old, so like if they're gonna flash back, that he would be like in the early 2000s, and then now they're teenagers or whatever age they're supposed to be, like quote unquote grown up.
They say 10 years ago, so it would have been 2010.
Yeah. But 2010. So like that, like to me, I'm like, oh my God, what time period is this? When he was a kid, there were podcasts, but I'm like, oh, well, technically.
Yeah. I mean, and This American Life would have been around because they've always repurposed that as a podcast. But like, wasn't he actually listening to Spotify?
I just thought he was like picking channels.
I don't know.
Like it was like 60s, 70s.
I don't remember him listening to Spotify, but I just remember being podcast. Now, again, I'm not exactly counting on Scooby-Doo to be the most accurate timeline, but for what it is, I'm like, okay, this tracks. Like it's clever. I think they did a really good job of bringing it to the to modernizing it to the current times, but also a ton of nostalgia and Easter eggs for people that grew up with the series.
There's a lot.
I love the recreation of the opening of the original opening credits.
Oh, I totally agree with you. It was great. It was that there's a lot of good stuff here. Like,
there is.
This is a solid, I would say more than solid. This is a really good Scooby-Doo movie.
Yeah.
You know, like it is weird how close it is to the 2002 version. You take out the Blue Falcon stuff. You take out, the Dick Dastardly stuff. The message of this movie and some of the gags in this movie are taken right out of the 2002 version, down to like a whole pinching scene. Like that happens in both movies. And like, as I'm watching the Scoob, I was like, oh, that's really all right. Nobody's going to mention that this is in both movies. Okay.
And I did that in reverse. You know, I had never seen one. And so I watched.
Had you never seen the 2002 version?
No, I had never seen it.
Oh, good stuff.
And
okay.
I had went back and did that. Well, I mean, I did it afterwards. But it's interesting because I will just say, I don't know if you guys have followed it all, but people on the internet hate this movie.
I don't know why.
They hate, I can't either. But then they're also complaining about certain things. And I went back and watched the movie that everybody loves because all these people grew up with it. And I'm like, they did the same stuff. Like, what? Because like, so one of the complaints online was like, oh, yeah, it was really smart to split up the mystery gang at the beginning of the movie. I'm like,
they're not together at all in the O2 version.
Yeah, I just watched the entire James Gunn one that everyone loves. And I'm like, oh, they split them up in the beginning of the movie. Like,
So when they get back together, they're not working together. They're working
at odds. Yeah. I'm telling you what, people online, and you know what? If you like a movie, hate a movie, that's fine. But sometimes I just don't buy it. People set up to hate things, and they've either got their nostalgia goggles or they just think it's silly. I don't know what the deal is, but the hypocrisy on some of these complaints, I just don't understand it, because to me, this was a solid kids movie. First of all, I think kids will absolutely love it. I think it's so fun. I think that the animation is great. I think that the humor is fun for kids. I also think there's good humor for adults. Like me and Katie thoroughly enjoyed it. So I think kids will love it. I think it's a really fun movie. And I think it's got a really good message. Like this is what I'm looking for in a kids movie. Now, is it the best kids movie ever? No. Is it Pixar level? No. I'm not saying it is, but you got to look at this as a kids movie, right? Like, kids movies are not adult movies. They don't have the same themes. They don't always have the same. I'm not saying they can't, but I'm saying is the target that what they're trying to go for is not always the same thing adults look for in their movies. But to me, this checked all the boxes of nostalgia, of the characters, of good animation, of fun for kids and entertainment.
I laughed multiple times during the movie.
I did as well.
Yeah. And I feel like if this movie had the emotional resonance of a Pixar movie, that would be weird. That's not what Hanna-Barbera does.
No.
That is not who Scooby-Doo is.
It's goofy. These have always been silly properties. And if you've seen any of these, like because of Boomerang, like I've had Boomerang before that I paid for. It's only like $5 a month.
It's not a bad deal, honestly.
No. You get a lot of stuff for $5, especially if you have kids. But, if you go back and get the free trial and you watch some of those Scooby-Doo movies, like the straight-to-video stuff is not that great. Not all the time, at least.
Nope.
And so, I mean, this is a solid Scooby-Doo movie, and I think they put way more effort into fan service, like in a good way, fan service and the characters. And like, you can tell the people that wrote this loved the property and had an understanding. Yeah. And I don't know, to me, they got it right.
Yeah, yeah, I it's hard to dispute anything that you're saying, because I do think that Scooby-Doo is not a property that should be taken seriously. Like, it's ridiculous. Like,
it's a talking dog. Hello.
That's exactly right. It's a talking dog that hunts down ghosts.
Yeah.
You know,
I mean,
and then
kids that are
the lesson they teach you is like, no, ghosts aren't real. People are awful.
Yeah.
Like, human beings are the terrible ones.
Well, I do hate the shift that the series overall has made, where all of a sudden the ghosts, they were actually dealing with the paranormal. Like, for years and years, I like the fact that they were like, no, that's not true. That's not real.
It's old Mr. Carruthers.
Yeah, and it was always not real. And then at some point, I'm sure it's difficult to keep writing stories like that. But
it's the same story over
right,
and over.
But it's like, but I also I didn't like the fact that, like, now that their ghosts are real and they do hunt them. Like, I thought that's a material change in the premise, you know?
That's true. That's true. So this one, it's pretty cut and dry. Like, there's not a lot to this plot.
I thought, Scooby, oh my god. Okay, so real quick. So they go through an origin story, the first 15 minutes of the movie, which most people, most of the critics enjoy this part, but it's like how they met up and Scooby's trying to steal food and he goes with Shaggy and he's got this big ham thing and the police are looking for the person that stole it. And this police officer is like, if this is really your dog, what's his name? And he's like, Scooby. And then he's like, and he's like, middle name? Doobie.
He's like, well, he has a middle name, so you must be telling me the truth.
I laughed out loud so
that's
much.
A very good line.
Tom left. I wanted to see if that were if that played with him, but oh my god, when he says, "Oh my god, well, if he has a middle name, then it must be like I."
He must be telling me the truth.
Yes, I thought that was fantastic. Or no, he's like, if you have a middle name, then you can't be committing a crime or something.
Yeah,
like, he's
right. Like, because his name is Dew, he just lets him off the hook with this giant like kebab of meat. So yeah, the story is pretty simple, like I said. The gang, you know, we get, it's funny like seeing Daphne wear a Wonder Woman costume. I was like, yeah, that tracks. Mm-hmm. Like, you've got the rights to the Wonder Woman stuff, why not throw her in that? Fred's the knight in shining armor, and Velma is you know,
Ruth Bader Ginsburg,
which I thought was great.
I thought that was interesting. I the Ginsburg thing I thought was very interesting, because like when they have Velma being Ruth Bader Ginsburg, and I was like, well, that's kind of a political commentary on who these characters are. That's, you know, like that, they're, you know, but then they also kind of immediately walk it back because Shaggy thinks that she's a Harry Potter. And then he's like, and then he's like, oh, Slytherin.
Yeah, right.
So it's like, okay, there's a joke in there for both sides. Everybody calm down.
Yeah. Right, right.
But, you know, like, to me, Velma would, be, I mean, Ruth Bader Ginsburg would be her hero.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think the other voice cast, I think, is really good. Zac Efron as Fred.
You know what?
Totally tracks.
Having watched that Freddie Prinze Jr. casting and that other one, and I was thinking, who would be the modern day Fred? And I'm like, oh, Zac Efron. And then I'm like, oh, wait a minute. He did a voice in Scoob. He is
he is absolutely Fred.
Now, I mean, clearly, I think we can all agree, this is actually fact and law. You can't argue this. Frank Welker is Fred, like, that's the voice, right? Yeah. Like, but if you're going to get a celebrity voice, and if you're going to do a live action one, especially, it's not going to be Frank Welker. I think Zac Efron would be a good Fred.
Yeah, and Amanda Seyfried is Daphne, and then I don't know who Velma was. Genesis Rodriguez, I think, was her name.
I thought it was Gina Rodriguez, but
maybe it's Gina.
She's
Rodriguez.
On Jane the Virgin on CW.
Okay.
I didn't like the fact that she made no effort to sound like Velma.
Yeah. Yeah. And Daphne, I feel like Daphne and Fred are kind of a blank slate.
Yeah, I would agree.
But Velma does have a...
Everybody in this movie, I think, and I guess because they got celebrities, and I'm not saying they have to do this, but I think everyone was just doing their voices.
Linda Cardellini does a Velma voice.
No, I'm not saying she doesn't. I'm saying in this movie, I think everybody just sounded like their voices. Like, I don't think any of them... I mean, of course, Shaggy, they're going to try to do something, because you can't just... talk normal as Shaggy, but everybody else just sounded like they did in real life. But I will say, even if she didn't sound like we think Velma usually sounds, I liked this characterization of Velma a lot. Like, as far as her, she was smart and she was really good at what she did, but she had a certain confidence to her, to where it wasn't like, oh, it's just nerdy Velma. Like, I really liked this version of Velma.
I would agree with that. Like, I like the writing, and I like the performance. I just wish she sounded like Velma. Like, that's
So she also gives her some Latino flair at one point. Like, she starts speaking in Spanish at one point when they're in the mystery machine.
I mean,
so it's just like, all right, well, it's
I think that's just we're in 2020, and that's, I mean,
totally.
It's not a bad thing to get that extra.
No, not at all. Not at all. This plot is very basic. You know, our team breaks apart. They go their separate ways. Shaggy and Scoob end up not captured, but they end up joining forces with the Blue Falcon, who was a Hanna-Barbera property.
I thought the Blue Falcon...
voiced by Mark Wahlberg.
Yeah, Mark Wahlberg. I thought the Blue Falcon stuff was really funny. Like, the fact that he's, like, living in his dad's shadow.
He's aloof.
And is like, yeah, you know, our dad's no longer with us, or, you know, my dad's no longer with us. And they're like, oh my god, the Blue Falcon died. And they're like, no, he retired to Florida. But the fact that, like, Mark Wahlberg's just this screw-up, like, he's, you know, he's buff and he's vain and you know, and he's trying to be a superhero just because he has the costume on, but he doesn't have anything it takes to be the Blue Falcon.
And they also kind of flipped the script, because in the show it was like Dino Mutt that was always screwing things up, and Blue Falcon was very kind of buttoned
up. Oh, right on, right
and
so, on.
And that's Ken Jeong,
Dino
right?
Mutt, Ken Jeong, yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
So we find out that what they are trying to do is there's these three skulls of Cerberus, and Dick Dastardly, who I only remember him from like that Gumball
Wacky
Rally
races.
Show. Wacky that's what I remember him.
Yeah, that's what he's
from.
Was
he on something else? Was he somebody else's villain or no?
No, he's...
I don't think so.
Okay.
Yeah, he's Wacky Races, and I will say...
Jason Isaac was the voice of...
two things great. About this. One, I love that they brought Dick Dastardly in because he's a really fun villain. So I thought
him and Muttley are both great.
Yeah, and I thought that played really well. And two, Jason Isaac is awesome in this role. He... Talk about voice acting and putting on a character and a voice and everything. I thought Jason Isaac was great.
He sounded like Dick Dastardly, yeah.
Yeah, he sounded like just Dick Dastardly, and it's like he was not phoning it in.
No,
Jason Isaac is—he's not a voice actor. Like, I mean, he's—you know—of course he plays Draco Malfoy's dad in the Harry Potter movies, and you know he's been in a ton of other movies, but he's not a voice guy, and like he nailed this.
I feel like he was Superman or Batman.
I'm not saying he's never had a role. Maybe he did, but you know, it's just like the guy really gave it his all, and so I feel like it was almost like. I mean, it's like the opposite of what most of the Mystery Gang was doing.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they, you know, we find out that Dick Dastardly, the Dick Rick go between, I was like, man, they are doubling down on the word Dick now, which
that was
fine.
I thought that was really funny, but it was also, I thought it was written very well because it was like, it was a funny Dick joke. And it was also because of the exchange. Parents don't have to explain why they're laughing, because the exchange even beyond that was was humorous.
That's what I'm saying.
Exactly.
Rick.
Yeah.
Yeah, Rick.
And and then that between that and dropping F-bombs.
F-bombs.
Oh,
and the,
yeah, right,
and the,
right, right.
The biography names, Falcon Around and not and just Falcon Around.
I thought that,
Falcon Around.
Yeah, I thought that played really well, like as far as adult humor in a kid's movie where it's going to go right over kids' heads. You don't have to have like parents complaining, although I know they can complain about anything. But for the most
no fear, my friend.
Like, you know what I mean? Like kids aren't going to question it because it makes sense in their world and parents can chuckle at it. It's good.
Our team breaks apart. Scooby kind of gets a bigger role and Shaggy is kind of left behind, and of course he gets pissy. And the deal is that Scooby is the last descendant of Alexander the Great's dog, and Dastardly wants him to open like this portal that would bring back ancient Greece and the Cerberus. I don't know why he wants to do that.
I don't think he wants to bring back Cerberus, but he definitely wants the treasure that's hidden.
Oh, that's right,
the
treasure,
door.
Right. And Cerberus comes with it.
Yeah.
And so the Falcon Fury, which I like that whole setup, the costume looks badass. Like,
oh yeah.
Cool.
I thought Scooby
that ship was great.
That ship was great.
Yeah.
Where they're basically trying to get to these skulls, the skulls of the Cerberus, and protect Scooby at the same time. You know, it's very simple. We get to our team reconverges at the last possible second, and they, you know, fix the friendship. But it turns out that the only way to get the Cerberus back into the gates of hell, which is, I mean, where he's from, not the River Styx. I'm not going to go through that.
Oh,
again.
My God. Well, I did edit that, so people don't know about that. But, I mean, since you brought it up.
Yeah,
Joe did,
I don't know what the
Joe
hell I'm
did
talking
tell
about.
An origin story where Moses was sent down the River Styx, and it was hilarious.
One can only hope.
I may have to add it back as a special feature sometime, but
Kevin, it was a reboot.
Oh, okay. Well, you know what? To be fair, if it was in Zack Snyder's telling,
see, this is what I'm saying.
I get it.
So it's a pretty good emotional beat where obviously they're not. What happens to happen is one person has to be on one side.
I just turned it off. Didn't Shaggy sacrifice himself?
Shaggy
right?
sacrificed himself.
Yeah,
he never came
end.
Back.
Okay.
Yeah. They actually, the flip is they brought back Matthew Lillard
to
be a different alternate universe Shaggy. So the deal is man and his best friend, one has to put his handprint on it. The other has to put his paw print, but one has to be on the other side. And that's kind of it. Like that's the only way to do it. And of course, Shaggy, this entire movie has had this, basically who Shaggy is, right? Like, he doesn't want to do, he doesn't want to go into the spooky house. He doesn't want to fight the ghosts. He's just kind of, he's a scaredy cat.
Well, he's also had the chip on his shoulder that you were alluding to earlier, where, like, you know, Shaggy and Scoob are the lovable losers. Like, they're great. They're funny, you know, they're good pals, but they don't really do anything. They always luck into solving these crimes and they're just goofballs, right, and everything. And so they don't really have much going for them in that regard. And then they find out Scooby is the descendant of this great dog, and Shaggy gets really jealous, and we see this a lot in kids' movies. And the lesson of the story is, I mean, you have to be happy for your friends, and it's okay, like, if your friends have something, not to be jealous of them. And Shaggy ultimately learns that, like, hey, it's okay, and hey, now I can do something important, and he sacrifices himself to stay behind the gate.
Correct. The gates are closed, and Grease goes back to being normal. And then, of course, at the very end, Velma's like, hey, wait, there's something else written here. And it brings back Shaggy. Like, that's the incantation brings back Shaggy. And
I like that Cerberus kicks him out.
Yeah, he does kind of like, I will say, there is a lot of throwbacks in this movie, down to, like, sound effects. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like, when they blink, like, there's just a certain, like, blink, blink.
Oh, and like, yeah, like when they burn like out, all... like the burnout.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, no, it's just a great homage to the, if you know this series, I think there's a lot in here. And I feel sad for the people that didn't enjoy it, that are fans, because a lot of them are doing that whole they ruined my childhood thing and they got it all wrong. But if you just sit back and you, like, without dismissing it, there's a lot to enjoy here.
Yeah, I would agree. I when Shaggy goes into, like, sacrifices himself for Scooby, I'm just kind of like, you know, the dog's 10 years old. Like, I'm not trying to be a jerk, but...
But I'm just saying.
Oh, but I'm saying, like, he's closer to the end than the beginning. How about
that? That's true.
I guess that's why you don't set these shows, like, in any kind of time period, you know? Like, you don't usually do time jumps with animal stuff.
Right.
No.
Yeah.
No, they won't last. But, and then, you know, they get a new mystery machine because their old one got blown up.
I did feel a little weird about that.
It's whatever.
It being a spaceship modernized, because, like, I mean...
But wasn't it Shaggy's car?
Well, it is in the movie. I don't know if it... I always took it as Fred's car in the cartoon.
Okay.
But in the movie, it's Shaggy's for whatever. I guess because he's a beatnik, like a hippie, because so they make it like, oh, it's my hippie van. But I don't know. It blows up, and isn't Fred sad about it?
Fred is...
Yeah, because, like, Fred, like, has, like, an emotional relationship with the van throughout the movie. You see him lovingly... caring for it.
I think it's his car normally.
The flower is the shield.
I think it's a movie thing that they made it. I should say James Gunn movie thing. But yeah, like, the mystery machine is so iconic, and I know that they can keep the paint job the same, but it being that big square van, like, that is in pop culture ingrained into our brains.
My aunt had one. That thing was dope. Like, it had a kitchen in it, and it had, like, you could take the roof and it would pop up and there was a bed there. Like, it was like this crazy, like, conversion van.
I'm just saying, if I ever found one for a good deal, I would paint it to look like the mystery machine. Like,
those were cool, man. Yeah. I like those. But yeah, so and then we get a kind of like a, in, I don't want to call it a post-credit sequence, but as the credits are rolling.
Can we say how, okay, first of all, like, the Simon Cowell gag was stupid, but the fact that they unmasked Dick Dastardly, we didn't mention, and it was really Simon Cowell. But then they unmask Simon Cowell and it's Dick Dastardly.
Line where he's like, huh, they never go for the second mask.
I didn't like how Simon Cowell's character design looked like a real human being.
Right, and with a cartoon. I know. I thought the same thing.
Like, they should have figured out a way to make him look like Simon Cowell, but within the art design of this universe.
You know, they kind of fall into that. That's a problem that all animated shows fall into. Like, even with The Simpsons, because humans in The Simpsons don't always have a Simpsons design, you know what I mean? Like, they're too human-like. And so I've noticed that. And that's like when, like, in the game Fortnite, I know you guys don't play, but I play with Ryan a lot, and, like, they put characters out. So, like, they did a John Wick skin, and so it really does look like Keanu. And it's like, but Fortnite characters are cartoony. So you're like, oh, it's a human in this cartoony world. You know, it's just something. That it, you're right. It's like, I guess, like The Good Dinosaur, like photorealistic backgrounds with cartoon dinosaurs. Like, you know, it just doesn't mesh.
Yeah.
So I
liked I liked Captain Caveman. I like Tracy Morgan as Captain Caveman.
Oh yeah,
that was fun.
He had one of my favorite lines of the movie where he says something about, like, where he's like, oh, we're going to help you get your wheels back. And then he's like, whatever wheels are.
There were lots of funny jokes. I think the writers did a really good job with the jokes. And I, again, like, I mean, like what you like. I'm not trying to force you to like something. It's whatever. But I just feel like people went into this. I would love to understand it more with wanting to hate it.
I think it's Will Forte. I think that...
That was a huge thing. You're right.
I think
yeah, that was a big thing for me.
Every time he talks, it's a reminder that he doesn't sound like Shaggy. And I just think that... So it just put people off from the get-go. I mean, I was already put off by the fact that the little kid made no effort to sound like Shaggy.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
It was just a straight little kid voice. It's the actor who plays young Sheldon. But I was just like, okay, he's a little kid, whatever. But I think if Will Forte had sounded more like Shaggy, I think people would have had a different reaction to this movie.
I think that would have been, if he sounded more like Shaggy, I think that would have made it better. But I'll have to disagree there. I think they screwed up. I think it shouldn't have been Will Forte. Like, at the end of the day, people were never going to forgive them. I mean, especially, like, did you see the heartbreaking tweet from Matthew Lillard when they cast Will Forte?
Yeah, I did.
Well,
like,
not even.
I mean, I think if Will Forte could have sounded like Shaggy, that people would have gotten past it. But I also think that since he couldn't, they should have never shifted from Matthew Lillard. And I think that I think they didn't gauge properly how much goodwill Matthew Lillard has, having played this character for, you know, the lion's share of the performances over the past
18 years,
almost 20 years. And
I think you're right, though. When it comes down to it, since I didn't ever see that movie, and I actually never watched a Matthew Lillard Shaggy performance, so I didn't understand it. But knowing now how much people love him from just like understanding that and going and watching that movie and listening to him on the newer cartoons, it's like, yeah, I get it. Like, they screwed him over, and I think that they killed so much goodwill with this movie. If they would have cast Matthew Lillard, I think, like, critically, like, this is sitting at under 50% on Rotten Tomatoes. You know, the internet people are outraged because they're not giving it a chance. All they had to do was cast Matthew Lillard, and I think this is a completely different story.
I concur wholeheartedly.
It's a good movie.
And I don't think Lillard's been doing it for 18 years. I think he made the two movies, but I think he took over the animation stuff in 2010, if memory serves.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Because Casey Kasem was still doing
it. Casey Kasem?
And because he left and came back, which we'll talk about in the next one, what that's about, because it affects the film, the next movie.
But still, with the love of I mean, people our age, like Joe and I, our age, people love this movie. And I never understood it because I didn't grow up with it. But, like, people love it. They absolutely adore it. Like, when I posted, I was watching it for the first time. I got so many reactions, and so many people love it. So, I mean, it makes sense to me now as to why people would feel so strongly about Matthew Lillard being Shaggy, and we'll get into it.
And we should go back to this. There's lots of cool little Easter eggs in the movie. So, like, on the boardwalk, there's a store called Casey's Creations, which is obviously Casey Kasem, the original voice of Shaggy, and the bowling alley that they go to.
Yeah, I was going to say, there's a lot.
Yeah, the bowling alley that they go to is Takamoto Bowl, who is, Takamoto was the guy who did the original character design on Scooby-Doo. At the island they go to that Cerberus is on is Messick Island, and Don Messick was the original voice actor for Scooby-Doo. He was the original voice of Scooby-Doo and Astro.
Did you see the Hong Kong Phooey Easter egg?
Yeah, there's a video in the bowling alley arcade. There's a video game for Hong Kong Phooey, and there's a video game called Wacky Races. Yep. And there's all.
Is there one for Laugh Olympics?
Yeah, I think there might have been. Like, there was a lot of cool. I mean, there are so many things like that. The police officers are all named after the original voice cast.
There's so much fan service in here. And again, like we say, sometimes fan service gets a bad rap, but I mean, we're talking about using in the best way. Like, people did their research. They planted tons of Easter eggs in here. Like, this is a, to me, this is a project of love. This isn't just a cash grab. And again, it's like, it's sad to me that like one stupid voice casting move made all this hate come out of it. Because if you watch this objectively and you sit back and see what they're doing, how they're paying homage and that it's a fun kids movie. I'm like, this, it works on every level.
I agree. Yeah. And the, and then just real quick, the closing credit scenes where you get the slides of the other kind of adventures that are
yeah.
going on. I really like that. Cause yeah, you get, Adam Ant joins the Falcon yep. Force. And then,
you get Dr. Quest,
who is apparently designing the, he has the blueprints and he's designing Rosie, the robot maid
yep.
oh,
from the
wow.
Jetsons, and then you get Jabberjaw and the Great Grape Ape, and Frankenstein Jr. was the name, I couldn't remember. Mm-hmm. And
yes, correct, and correct.
Then,
but no Space Ghost.
But no Space Ghost, no.
No Space
Ghost. But yeah, there was lots of cool stuff in there. And I should also point out the sidekick that Blue Falcon has, Dee Dee Skies, she's actually one of Captain Caveman's angels that he works with. So,
oh, okay.
Oh, really?
Yeah, like she's a main character on the TV show Captain Caveman. So,
got it.
So she, you know, so apparently at some point they're supposed to team up. So I like this. I hope they make more of them. I hope they expand it to the other Hanna-Barbera characters. You know,
I love the idea of the Hanna-Barbera cinematic universe. Seriously, there's so many good shows, and having grown up with all of them, I really enjoyed seeing them come together like this. And I mean, for what it's worth, I don't know what the numbers are on it, but apparently this made more money than Trolls did, and Trolls was a huge success. So
yeah, they're yeah. saying yeah. Trolls awesome. Made $40 million over its first 3 days, and this outpaced that. Now, I don't know. It'll be interesting long term, because Trolls you couldn't buy from the outset. So I think they mm-hmm. I've seen anecdotal evidence of people talking on Twitter about how they've had to rent the movie two or three times for their kids, where this time you could just plop down $25 and own it. So they might lose some revenue that way. But I think that's for the best. I think that's a bad precedent to get into, where it's like you're going to charge people $20 every time they want to watch this movie for the first, you know, 3 months.
I'll tell you right now, the extra $5, I mean, I bought this movie, I pre-ordered it
Same.
Weeks before, yeah, and if you're going to tell me that I can see a brand new movie for $20 and own it for $5 more, I mean, I'm already going to do that. I'm going to go to the theater if me and Ryan or me and Katie go. If we all go,
yep.
I'm going to spend $30. If both of us go, I'm going to spend $20. And then guess what I'm going to have to do release week? I'm going to have to spend $20 on a Blu-ray. $25 to own uh-huh. it? Like, I'm already saving money. I'm at home. We made a couple pizzas, frozen pizzas, you know, for $6 or whatever. It's like, I don't know, man. I don't need to see
Kevin. That kid can't eat pizza yet. He's still eating milk.
Oh, I'm not supposed to do. Oh, okay.
Just don't feed that kid. Especially the scalding hot.
He baby birds it. He chews it up and then spits it into his mouth.
No, you know all that extra grease that floats at the top of the pizza. You just
sure,
put that in a bottle,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's how they get big and strong.
Totally.
You know, my concern about the economics of this, as much as it benefits us, the public, is that, you know, Hollywood's very used to theatrical. And then they turn around. They said, like,
yep.
So yeah, they're going to make a lot of money at the outset, but they're not going to have that revenue 6 months later, where we turn around and then buy it on DVD or Blu-ray. So,
but Tom, you know what?
They're not getting right. double dipped.
That's very true. But you know what's interesting though? We keep looking at the losses they're going to take on Avengers and Fast and Furious. And I know these are huge movies, but people are not going to see the other 90% of movies in theaters. Like
yeah.
mid-budget movies
right,
are
right.
not making any money. So maybe it all evens out. Maybe more
yeah.
people will pay to own and see these mid-tier movies on VOD that would have never gone to the theater. So yeah, you may lose one big chunk, but you know, if you're going to make it up in numbers, I just think people have to realize that people do not go to the theater for most movies other than event movies. That's just the
yeah.
sad truth of it. Movie theaters are staying open for the next blockbuster movie, you know, month to month, week to week.
Yeah.
And you know, I think
this would have made $100-150 million.
domestic. I think this is a $100 million movie. Sure.
Yeah, I think absolutely. Yeah.
But
easily.
But when in Rome, like I think if the industry changes, Hollywood, yeah, it might suck to take that little bit of a loss, but they're gonna make it up on other movies. Maybe they're gonna have to adjust some of their budgets, but I think it's gonna become the new normal that eventually it's gonna just be like, yeah. I mean, kind of like streaming, how at first we're like, what the hell are these streaming platforms doing? And now we're like, oh, they spent $30 million to rework a movie that exists. Oh, cool, good for them. Smart move.
Yeah. I will also say real quick, with the $5 extra to own it on Vudu anyway, you got a $3 credit on a future purchase if you pre-ordered it. So you really paid $2 extra to own to own a movie. Totally worth $2. So.
Which is just ridiculous. So, like, I mean, that's a great deal.
I actually haven't seen my credit. Do they email that to
they
you?
They email you a code, so check your spam.
Yeah, I never got it, but I'm glad you reminded me, because, I definitely been using Vudu.
Yeah. So anyway, I guess that's it for this one. Let's go around the table and everyone can say where to find them.
This is Joe. You can follow me on the Twitter at JoeyButts, BUTTS21.
This is Kevin. Follow me on Twitter at Kevin R. Brackett.
This is Tom. You can follow me on Twitter at Roger Kubert or on Facebook at Facebook.com/Tom O'Keefe. You can find the show online, Facebook.com/Real Spoilers. While you're there, like the page, join the group, and of course, check us out on Patreon, Patreon.com/Real Spoilers, where for $5 a month you get all sorts of bonus content. So that's it for this one. Coming up on the next one, we will tackle the live action Scooby-Doo movie from 2000. Is that when that came out? 2000, something like that. So
it feels like it.
I don't think it was 2000. According to IMDb, 2002.
There we go. So you have that to look forward to. So thanks for tuning in. Until next time, his name is Scoobert.
Scooby-Dooby-Doo, where are you? We got some work to do now. Scooby-Dooby-Doo, where are you? We need some help from you now. Come on, Scooby-Doo, I see you. Pretending you got silver. You're not fooling me, 'cause I can see the way you shake and shiver. You know we got.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.